This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, it's C-Sparky, 5-12-50 AM, The Fan, beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Make sure to check out my weekday afternoon show. We just started last week, Wisconsin Sports Daily, 2 to 5 in the afternoon on 12:50 AM, The Fan. And then, of course, after every Milwaukee Bucks game, even games in which they get run out of the gym in the fourth quarter, like last night in Game 2 of the Pacers series, still on either way. Potawatomi Sportsbook Pro Hoops post-game show, served up by Wendy's. Of course, Dwight Albrecht, he's always there to serve all of your bowling needs, drilling bowling balls. And if you want to get geeky and talk bowling, he's there for you. He will do that with you with a smile on his face. Follow him on Twitter at Dewey300. Check out his pro shop over there at New Berlin Bowl, Spare Time Pro Shop. And of course, Phil Brilo, he is everywhere that you're streaming more than likely, and especially on YouTube. Follow him at Brew City Bowling. You were just out in Detroit, out at the World Championships, right, Phil?
Sunday, I got that the World Championships in Detroit, went down to Fairlawn, Ohio, caught the first day of the TOC with the PTQ and the practice session, the final session of the PBA Elite League, except for two matches that'll be on TV on FS1 on Saturday. And got back home late last night. So
what was the turnout like during the week for World Series of Bowling?
In the main bay, it was good. It wasn't, I mean, there were 100-150 people there during like the PBA match play at night. Daytime crowds were a little soft, but the arena was packed. I mean, you saw that crowd on Sunday. They were all the way out the door. A couple hundred people were out the door waiting already to get in at 10:30.
That's awesome.
In the morning, and the show didn't start till noon. So yeah, it was the turnout was good.
So they're happy. I would assume they go back then.
I think that's, if you talk to the players, if you talk to like Tom Clark and that, I think it's one of two or three centers that they would love to have the world championship at with the World Series of Bowling every year would be Thunder Bowl.
So hotels, everything else are easy, accessible. Everybody's happy because that's part of it. You know, when you were at, South Point in Vegas, nobody obviously was complaining. There was all kinds of stuff to do when you weren't bowling. Everybody was staying within one or two hotels out there. And it all was fine, depending on the city you go to and hotel availability, depending on what else is going on in town and so forth. That may be a hindrance. Like if you look at Milwaukee last summer, when they were trying to get hotels and everything else, everything was packed up.
Yeah.
You had Harley with their big celebration. Mm-hmm. You had Summerfest and all the festivals in Milwaukee. Like hotel space was really, really limited. That might be the reason why they didn't come back to Milwaukee, was for that reason.
One of the reasons, I know there was just some, they wanted to keep it centralized, and there were some other management decisions that went on with the PBA LBC National Championships. But I think the move a couple hours south to Chicago, it's already
That's
got
not
the entry.
Chicago.
Well, around O'Hare, it's around O'Hare. But still, they're ahead of entries from last year by far already, and I think that's just part of the equation too. Is, you know, people hear Chicago and there you go. You get to do a lot of stuff around there.
And you're drawing from a larger metropolitan area where it's a shorter drive.
Right.
Versus driving from Chicago to Milwaukee. Maybe you're only driving 15, 20 minutes now to get to that bowling center to go bowl if you want to give it a shot. Yeah. If you're coming from Indianapolis, that's still quite a bit of a drive, but it's not as far. Yeah. Milwaukee to there still isn't that far of a drive to where you could still make that work. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you know, being in Milwaukee, you want to see that, you know, stay in Milwaukee. But that's okay. I mean, I understand it. All right.
It's going to be good. It's going to be another great event for the LBC. It's getting bigger and better. They're going to have the shootout finals again that we saw Lenny on last year in Bayside Bowl. It's going to be a blast.
All right. So let's get to the World Championships. The guy that grew his popularity during this World Series of Bowling, by far the biggest, Packy Hanrahan, not even close with the Packy chants and everything else going on. He takes on Martell there in the first match. I felt bad. I'll be honest. I felt bad. Martell did not look like he had much of a clue for parts of that game. He just kind of looked lost. He had that nervous smile, like, I want to sit down and cry. I'm so lost right now. I kind of felt bad for it, but that happens sometimes, man. You get on TV, conditions change, whatever. You can't find your spot, and it's tootle to you. And Packy Hanrahan, on the other hand, was not having any issues, Phil.
Well, one thing to keep in mind with Martell is that he's on the outside looking in for the top 43 that get the exemption for next year. He was outside in points. He knew he needed a big run in the world championship because he was not eligible for the TOC at all. He doesn't even have a regional title. He's got 7 seconds in 4 different regions. I mean, he's a talented player, no doubt. But, you know, when you know you have to advance to keep your next year alive, sometimes that could really tighten up the arm
swing.
More
pressure.
I think that was part of the problem for Martell, is that it's just there was a lot going on at the moment. And, you know, 4 lefties out there. They had the lefties all during match play. It was 9 lefties and 7 righties and the 16 players that made match play. So the conditions are there to kind of build up some carry down for the lefties, and he just didn't get around it. The number of soft sevens that we saw all weekend long was just goes to show the power of urethane is good to a point. And that was it for Martell.
What did you take away from it, Dwight?
Well, one thing on that match in particular with Martell, and they talked about it, Randy and Rob, and how great was it to see Rob Stone back?
I was telling Dwight before we started here that I've been dealing with a sinus infection since like last Monday. I'm trying to get into the doctor currently before Wisconsin Sport Daily this afternoon here on Wednesday. Dwight, that made me feel better. It did. It put a smile on my face. I was like, oh, thank the heavens.
God, I mean,
was so happy. Oh, my God. I was so happy to have Rob Stone back. The chemistry is just right on point. Yeah. There's so much fun together. You can tell they're having fun together.
It's a quality show.
He's lighthearted. Like, he doesn't over try.
Yeah, it's a natural thing.
That's so good. Yeah, but thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Yes, that was very nice.
So they brought it up, Phil, and there were a couple of things I wanted to get your take on. We'll talk about the next one later, but for at least Martell's match, USBC in 2019 changed rules on powders for the league bowlers, kind of turn it more into our national bowling event, which is now in South Point this year, where they eliminated powders of all kind, even for league bowling in 2019. Martell put so much rosin on his fingers that they showed a close-up of the rosin leaving his finger holes and going into the lane. So what's the PBA rule on that? Is that allowable? Because, I mean, obviously, aren't you eventually going to change the lane condition?
No, I mean, it looks like a lot coming out, especially when they get the close up on it, but it's so negligible. It's no different than dust. I mean, there's enough dust in the air from people flaking off body skin and everything else. It doesn't make that much of a difference. As long as the player contains their rosin or any other powder or anything in a bag, so it doesn't like get all over the approach and get all over the player's area and the bowling balls, they're fine to use it. So that's why you see the guys now have their rosin bags and pouches that close up, because in that way it's not getting spread all around and they're not pounding on it like they used to. And
so how
trying to make the LeBron James.
How oversized are the man's holes in his bowling ball that he can't hold on to it, that he's got to put that much rosin on his fingers? That's what I was thinking. I was like, but if I put that much rosin on my fingers, I'd be in the pins myself.
Did you see
when
how
I went to release?
It?
Yes.
Yeah, he grips it. I mean, it's like contorting.
Yes.
His hand to get into the ball.
It's just like, are they over drilling the holes so they're a little bit bigger than they're supposed to be? Does he like it that way or what?
No, he wrenches. I mean, he has to wrench everything in there. They're tight on him. He just likes to make sure that he's in that ball after the thumb clears, that those fingers are in as long as humanly possible. And you watch that release. It's a pretty unique release he has too.
Yeah.
Out there with the hand kind of almost over the top and everything. And it's just his style. It's just the way he's always bowled since he was a junior.
I would think with all that powder coming out of his fingers, I just, again, watching at home, I would think that the other pros would be too happy about that. That's where I'm trying to get some real clarification on that.
I would think they're used to it at this point. He's been on tour long enough. They know what they're dealing with. And Phil, you're saying he was using that much rosin in juniors?
Oh, probably. I mean, back in his college, I remember seeing at some college events, and he was always had a rising bag with him. So
really,
yeah,
yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, yeah. That wouldn't fly at a USBC event, though.
No, but.
That's, but it's the PBA instead.
It's different rule.
I get it.
Yeah, right. They allow you to do more. So Hanrahan over Bartel, 256 to 193. Next up, Packy Hanrahan against Kyle Sherman. This was a complete struggle on both sides. Hanrahan lost his way. And Kyle Sherman, now again, they really played up the getting cut by the Elite League, right?
Yep.
By Del Ballard.
They sure did.
It was a big thing. And she's texting Randy, and Randy's reading the text on the air.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm Tom Clark, the commissioner of this,
yeah,
please do more of that. Cause that's just a whole bunch of drama. Right. By all means, continue to text Randy when there's drama on the show and defend yourself. I don't think there was a reason to have to defend anything. He hasn't bowled to the level where he needs to bowl to be on the team.
There was injuries in that too.
Life sucks, but that's what happened. So now the whole storyline of, oh, here comes Kyle Sherman trying to prove everybody wrong.
Right.
Prove anybody wrong. Yeah. I mean, he
didn't look sharp.
He didn't look sharp. I mean, one shot, Randy Peterson, Randy goes, that's just a bad shot by a pro. Like a pro should not be throwing that type of shot where he missed the head pin wide right.
Yes.
And then he missed the spare in the 10th frame. Yep. I mean, that type of stuff.
That's what gets you cut.
But that's pressure, right? I mean, you go back to Martel pressure with Phil. I'm sure Sherman was feeling pressure too, being back on TV after getting cut from Elite League, knowing they're going to talk about it, him trying now to produce and prove his point.
Yep.
Plus he's Mr. YouTube. So there's a lot going on, and he could not get himself going. And again, the lanes obviously were breaking down because Hanrahan was struggling too. It wasn't like he was bowling like he did in the first game. So there were some struggles. Dwight, what did you take away from the whole Kyle Sherman drama?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Awkward. A little bit awkward. There were, but from that match, though, I put in my notes, there were a couple of funny things. I loved Rob Stone's take on the Prince on Raspberry Beret.
That was funny.
For Tom Clark's cap. I thought that was pretty funny.
I didn't realize he knew that many lyrics. Words. Yeah, I didn't realize he had it memorized. That's right. Pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. And then the segment that they did on naming a bowling ball, and I was going to love to get your two takes. If you were to name a bowling ball, what would you guys name it? I have mine, of course.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. But it would be something violet. Like, it shouldn't be nerdy. It should be something.
Then mine's going to be nerdy.
Oh, Lord. What is yours, Dwight?
Mine would be the kitchen sink.
Oh, sure. I don't mind that.
Because
you're throwing the kitchen sink at it or whatever. Right.
If you go to a tournament and the guy goes, well, what did you bring? I brought everything, including the kitchen sink.
Right. Brought 100 balls. Right. Exactly right. Wanted to be right. But that's funny. I kind of get that one. Right. But like letters and numbers and all this weird stuff or anything that is not aggressive in nature, I don't like. Get rid of it. I want aggressive, angry terms for my bowling balls if I had a choice. Phil, what about
here
you?
Here comes the apocalypse. Yeah,
fine. There we go. Perfect. Yes.
There we go.
The new ball by modem, the apocalypse. Yes. The go ahead and do it.
Almo did mention the boom, possible boom. We talked about that like a year ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Look, do I care that much one way or the other?
It was a funny bit, though.
But Rob Stone has been on this whole name of bowling balls thing for quite some time. Yeah. Like, who comes up with these? And he's right. Some of these are really goofy. And I don't know if, who comes up with it for the different manufacturers or companies or whatever. But It was a funny bit. I agree. Yeah. Dwight, or I should say Phil, what did you take away from the Sherman match there?
When the tournament moves from the main bay to the arena bay, don't miss the practice session. I know Kyle's, he said he bowled more games at the World Series of Bowling than he had the entire 2024 to this point. And it's a different lane. It's a newer lane surface. It's only a couple years old in the arena bay, and it plays different and everything. And the players have an alternate, they have a chance to practice on Friday with no, you know, they put the tournament shot out and they get an hour to throw and try things and stuff like that. And Kyle took the day off and to rest and relax. I thought maybe he'd even come in for like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes towards the end, just to see if, you know, what the ball reaction's like as compared to what was out in the main bay. And he decided rest was a little more important because of his injuries. And I think that kind of showed in his ball reaction. I mean, sure, they get the half hour practice before the show, but I still think it just wasn't enough for him to overcome and try to find a way to trick it around. I mean, the lefties didn't gang up on him like they did on Belmo a couple nights earlier. I mean, the lefties stayed on their own side during practice, and Sherman had his side. And I think the lefties were just like, let's build up our side. We don't have to worry. I think the attitude kind of
was. That's right.
We don't have to worry about Kyle.
Yes.
Right.
That is correct. Belmo, they worry about. Kyle Sherman, they do not. That's exactly right. You stopped yourself from saying it, but that's exactly right. You know, they weren't worried about Kyle Sherman. And the only way they're ever going to worry about Kyle Sherman again is if Kyle Sherman gets himself healthy and committed to trying to get back to where he needs to be to be a guy that gets on TV consistently. Yeah. Not showing up at practice. I'm not going to judge that because I don't know what was hurting on the man. I don't know what was hurting on his body. I don't know how much pain he was in. Who knows? He might have been sitting in a bucket of ice for all day. I mean, I have no idea.
90 some games the previous 2 weeks. I mean,
a lot of bowling.
There's a lot of bowling.
That is lot of bowling. Yeah. So Kyle Sherman. Sherman gets beat there. Hanrahan advances. Next up, here comes the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Here he comes. Eric Jones. I've heard about Eric Jones from Phil and Dwight for quite some time now about Eric Jones. When I think of Eric Jones, I think of the NASCAR driver, Eric Jones. Do not think of a bowler. So I was like, okay, here we go. Eric Jones. Here's another fun hairstyle, the whole deal. Eric Jones and Packy Hanrahan. Hanrahan didn't bowl horrible. He bowled better than he did the previous game.
Yeah.
But Jones was just at a different level that first game. That first match on TV for him, he came out and he was locked in immediately, Dwight.
It was the show of the lefty, no thumbers or two-handers.
Yep.
God, that kid's impressive, you know, and initially I was like, Eric Jones. Oh, and then they showed the replay of him at the junior event in 21. And then all the memories came back. And obviously in those 3 years, he's matured quite a bit for, what was it, 19 years old? So, God, the guy's a force. I was real impressed with his dad. I just kept thinking, if my daughter was in that same situation, I would have been just like his dad standing
playing
up.
A saxophone.
I used to play trumpet, but I don't remember any of it.
Phil, did you know he played trumpet?
I had no idea
he played trumpet. Oh, see, good job, Eric Jones. We got some more intel on Dwight over here. Okay, good.
But I would have been standing up, you know, looking back at the crowd just like his dad did, except I wouldn't be playing the national anthem.
Dad got about as much FaceTime as he got. He did. Yeah, a lot of FaceTime. Mm-hmm. But as a parent, like you're saying,
how proud.
Yeah, as a parent, you relate to what that dude's feeling. You're like, I totally get it. And then the whole story of, you know, this kid wants to play. He's spending like $200 a week, he said. Paid for bowling,
right?
And he negotiated a deal with the guy that owned the club,
sax.
That had a club there at the bowling alley or whatever. He's like, dude, if I play sax for you, can my kid bowl for free? Sure, all right, deal. So, but see, that's something that when we talk about bowling not being necessarily an expensive sport like golf or whatever else, but if you really want to commit yourself and practice a lot, and if a bowling center is not going to help you and give you a break to help you be able to get out there and do it, it gets expensive quick. And then you got to start talking about, can your family afford to be spending $200 a week and going out there and bowling? Not everybody can afford to necessarily do that.
Yep.
So a lot of times you do need breaks along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yes. If you're going to bowl that many games, let's say at $3.50 to $4 a game, you bowl 10 games in a day, that's $35 to $40 a day.
Right.
And so practice.
There's got to be some type of deal. Like, it's something like, it's $20 a day. Bowl as much as you want. Don't care. But I'm not moving off the two lanes at the end of the house. That's where you're staying.
Well, the rest of the house got to make their money on it, too.
Absolutely. Right. They do.
They can't give it away.
Yes. What about the outside bowling lane?
I'm sorry.
What about the outside lane during COVID? The outside
the pandemic lane.
In the backyard. Did you see that?
Yeah. They even named it
that
something.
That is crazy.
Something crest or something.
And then they were screwing around with.
Yeah.
What did you put on it?
Spam?
Pam baking oil or whatever it was that they spray that they put on it.
Did you see the pins were string?
Yes, they were string. He had a whole thing to pull the ball returned back so the ball would come back. That was genius.
I said to my wife, I go, what happens when it rains?
That's what I said.
Right.
And
I
don't know if that thing is still up in the backyard. They never really asked, but I want to see Rob Stone and Randy Peterson go bowl on that thing. I want to see that happen. Oh, that would be amazing. So again, Eric Jones with his whole story of the backyard bowling lane, his dad played the sax, immediately gets into people's hearts.
Oh, absolutely.
Right off the bat.
Absolutely.
Right? So PBA
great story.
And TV did a great job of showing all of that. Then we move on to, so Jones beats Hanrahan, 267 to 232. Then it's Jones versus Justin Knowles for the championship match. And in this one, did we think Justin Knowles was going to have a shot going into this one, as well as Eric Jones bowled previously, Dwight?
I mean, again, another lefty two-hander, no thumber. It just comes down to then who's going to carry.
Right.
Again, like Phil said, a tremendous amount of flat sevens, all of them throwing urethane.
Yep.
So I thought it was a very close, entertaining match. The split conversion by Jones in the fifth, the 6-7-10, throwing a backup plastic ball at it.
He's throwing a backup at most of his spares on that side of the left side.
Right.
But the seventh pin, he was throwing the backup as well.
You try to do that.
Well, I can't. I mean, throwing a backup with one hand is something. Throwing it with two hands is something else. But we've seen Simonson do it. You don't have, is Belbonte ever did it, Phil?
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's several players that have in the repertoire now. Actually, Simo used it for a couple of games at the World Series. Once on the Scorpion didn't work, once on the Shark didn't really work for him, so he went back to conventional hook on it. But yeah, there's several two-handed players on tour that can go to that reverse hook. I don't like calling it backup anymore, but reverse hook to put up with the lane changes. If they think one side's got a distinct advantage, they can switch it up to the reverse hook.
I think that's what we do. I think we get Belbonte on. We say, hey, look, man, you've done everything, right? You're probably the greatest of all time, no question. But there's still something you haven't done. You'd be the only one to ever do it.
Right.
I want to see you win a tournament, any tournament, throwing a backup ball the entire tournament. Throw a backup the entire tournament. Be the only guy on tour that's ever won an event throwing a backup ball and won other events throwing a traditional hook. I don't believe it's ever been done. Correct,
Simon?
Well,
in the history of the...
Simonson did it in Delaware. Simonson did it in Delaware back in 2018. He threw a backup ball the last few games because in Delaware the ball returns are so close to the approach. Remember what Boog Power and those Boog Kroll and those guys are trying to do this year on TV,
right?
Fighting how close it was. So Simon wanted and he saw the left side was pretty clean. And the last three games of match play, he threw a 300 one of those games too, and then in the stepladder final, he went to backup and beat a lefty with a backup ball.
Right, but he didn't bowl the whole tournament with it. He went to it once
the lanes broke down.
Right, so he didn't start and qualify and go all the way through, correct?
Right.
That's what I've said.
Right.
I want to see somebody.
The whole tournament.
The whole thing from game one of qualifying all the way through, throw that backup ball. Not just when conditions make sense, but do it from the start. Go all the way through and play on that side of the lane for an entire tournament. But I don't know. It would be fun. I just think it's wild because one-handed bowlers.
Amazing what they can do.
One-handed bowlers, you never saw that.
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, Mark Roth wasn't throwing backup balls at things. Or Marshall Holman. Those guys weren't doing that type of stuff.
I don't think they even thought about being able to do that back then.
No. All right. So now on TV, you're watching this. You're like, all right, so we're doing a whole TV show just to get one dude to the real TV show the next day.
Yep.
But still, Mark, tell me, 13 G's.
And for just showing up on TV, 15 for Kyle Sherman for showing up. Patrick Henry had 20. And Justin Knowles, 25. And obviously,
great payout.
Jones doesn't cash out yet because Jones has to now go to the real finals stepladder at that point. So now we go to the stepladder. And this was fun. So right off the bat, you get Tackett against Eric Jones. Tackett, the 4 seed. Eric Jones, the 6 seed. And Eric Jones realized who E.J. Tackett was, is what happened there. Because E.J. Tackett, you know, say what you want about this whole thing, but Tackett has been kind of under fire all year, you know, for not closing when he's on TV. And that's been a thing. And so I'm sure the back of his mind is like, I want to put a couple of these titles, TV titles together here and have this at the end of the year. I think he's player of the year. I mean, we could talk about Bill O'Neill being up there, but I'm sorry. Tackett has been on TV more than O'Neill has, I believe.
Yeah.
That perspective, I think I would lead E.J. Tackett. Either way, Tackett wins 246-205. Eric Jones realizes that it's not going to be as easy once you start going up against beasts like this, like E.J. Tackett. Dwight.
Absolutely. And again, they did a wonderful job talking about that show on how brilliant E.J. was on using a very heavily sanded ball in the practice time to create that trough they talked about on TV. And so, again, otherwise the fans at home don't understand or why does E.J. have such a good look? Now, Kyle Sherman could have possibly have done the same thing too, but chose maybe not to. So brilliant for E.J. on trying to take a tough lane condition and setting it up for his game in the practice time.
So when something like that happens, Phil, is that a ball rep suggestion? Is that a E.J. on his own suggestion? How does that come into play?
That was mostly E.J. on his own with a little help from Brett Spangler and the other motive reps that were there. Kurt Pielan was there, and I'm just surprised that when the righty saw that happen, when the lefty saw that happen with E.J., that the spare balls didn't start going up the right side just to try to make that choppy. I mean, you see the guy just using something at 60. It was 180 grip pad, I think they used on it. I mean, it was just something that was going to soak
really?
Up the oil like a sponge. Yeah, it was. There wasn't chalk coming off of it when it hit the lane. It wasn't quite Martell-esque with the powder coming off.
Right.
Because obviously you have to. You know, take any of the residue off the bowling ball, but it was chalk. It was pretty, you know, pretty highly aggressively sanded. And then as the match went on, one of the balls he was using on the right lane kind of didn't like the reaction. Then he started using the same ball on both lanes. So even though it was the same brand of ball, he was using one ball on each because of how tight that right lane played all week.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. So match number two, Tackett now gets Graham Fah in that one, 213-202. Graham Fah doesn't scare me. I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I'm sure, you know, he's had his accomplishments and so forth. We've talked about Graham Fah last year on this podcast and so forth. Yeah. But when I see Tackett versus Graham Fah and I'm sitting on my couch, I realistically do not look at that and say E.J. Tackett's going to lose this match. Now, he could. Absolutely, he could. But to me, I wasn't as concerned about that one as others. Your thoughts on Graham Fah?
Once I saw E.J. getting past Graham Fah, I thought at that point of the show, he could make a run for the whole show.
Once he beat Jones, I was in.
You thought at
that point. Once he beat Jones, I was like, okay, that's it. And, you know, you wonder if they would have had this stepladder right after, like if it would have been a mega show of like 4 hours, would Jones have won? Would Jones have continued bowling and won and beat Tackett? So if Tackett was coming in cold and Jones was continuing to bowl on that pair, would Jones have eventually won that thing? But instead, you get the re-oil, you get the overnight to sleep, you come back. You know, everybody's different the next day.
Absolutely.
And now Tackett is locked in and Jones not as much. All right, your thoughts on Graham Fah, Phil?
Graham's a solid player. He had a chance to win. I mean, he had a pretty unique lane strategy too. He decided not to make E.J. finish on the right lane. I mean, so where Fah wanted ball in hand, he wanted to finish on the right lane because he thought he had a better look on it. And he just couldn't get off his hand. I mean, he just had the death grip on it in 10th frame and left that split. I mean, Fah still had a chance, but
yep. Two strikes and nine.
And he just gave it up right away at first ball of the 10th. And he's the first one admitted. He goes, I had the chance. I threw it terrible. You know, and
was that a choke?
A little. I think he just knew the situation where you got to make sure you help that ball get to the pocket with your thing. And he just overheld, you know, he just gave it too much. He wanted to make sure he got there. He didn't want to miss the head pin.
Right.
And yeah,
I think that would be a fear. Yes.
Yeah. So I, you know, is it a choke? Yeah, a little bit, you know,
yeah,
you know,
probably
you got to make that ball work more. So
then we get to match number three. Yeah. It's Tackett versus Jesper Svensson.
Yeah, this one.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dwight.
Well, what do we got to do to get Jesper to carry 560 rev rate? And the ball looked like it was hitting like it was 10 pounds. So, I mean,
yep.
You would think even with your, I put in my notes, when do we start thinking about getting Jesper to 16 pound weight? I'm assuming he's throwing 15, right, Phil?
I know nothing to the contrary. I don't necessarily know if that's good for him because, you know, if you with the ball dynamics, and especially with urethane, you see some guys change weight. It changes the RG and the differential and everything too a little bit.
It does.
Even with these small cores, and isn't necessarily better. Sure, you may have more weight, but it might not roll as good for him. You know, we do see some players on tour nowadays. Nate Stubler is one of them that switches between 15 and 16 with their urethanes just because it can make a difference on how the ball rolls, where it rolls on the lane, and how it hits. It might roll a little bit earlier, a little bit later. Could Jesper have benefited from a 16 that probably rolls a little bit earlier than a 15? In that case, yeah, with all the single pins he left. I mean, what do you leave, seven of them?
And a lot of nine counts, yep.
Three of them were 10 pins? It's like, you know, what else?
Even the announcers couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Randy and Rob.
Rob was literally begging for him to get strikes at one point.
Yeah, right. At one point, you just felt sorry for him.
Yes. Yeah. And there's not, I mean, again, I'm sure there was something he could do, I guess, but you would have to imagine him and his ball rep were trying everything they could think of to try and get better carry, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah. I mean, how many people come into your shop, Dwight, and they just go, I want that ball to hook more. I need a ball that hooks more, hooks more, hooks more. It's not the case on tour. It's where the ball hooks is where they're looking for on the front to back. And yeah, could Jesper have used something that maybe started rolling up 6 inches earlier to make a half inch of change on the back end? Yeah.
Well, the other
it's just
thing
amazing
that
the minutiae that these guys have to play in order to get 10 down on these PBA patterns.
Well, the other thing that went through my mind is how much does Jesper miss the pitch black?
Probably a little. But then again, how many Ebonite guys and Brunswick guys miss the purple hammer?
Yes.
And
that's true.
Yeah. I mean, Motive guys don't really miss a lot of urethane because they use a different technology for urethane like bowling balls. But they still, you know, they still miss some of the old tanks and stuff they were able to use at Motive. Yeah, everybody misses the stuff, but new rules, you got to get adapted to them. And Jesper's done a pretty good job adapting to them all season long. So they're getting used to the way the ball rolls different with the 78 IQ and the black pearl hammers and that type of thing. But, you know, but even nowadays, you didn't see a ton of guys screaming into purples and pitch blacks during the World Championship.
Yeah,
or not the World Championship, the USBC Masters, pardon me, when they could use them because that's a USBC event.
78 IQ, dumb ball name. There's one of them, the dumb ball name. Yes.
Right. Well, this, you know, with the rule change in the hardness dropping 5 degrees. So again, remember if people are listening to the show, they don't have to buy that ball if you're a league bowler. You can still use, of course, the purple hammer and then the pitch black. That's why they're still being made. This is just for tour only. But it just looked to me like Jesper is really, in my eyes, struggling with this rule change to the 78-degree hardness urethane.
If you would have watched him in the main bay all week long, you wouldn't have said that. It's a total different lane surface in that arena bay. And
goes back to what you said earlier about Sherman not taking that practice time. Right.
It's just one of those things. But even Jesper with taking the practice time and everything, it's a little it's the little things on the PBA tour that can make a difference between a 3-figure payday and a 6-figure payday.
No doubt.
Did you get a chance to interview Jesper regarding that match, Phil?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It should be. I think they posted it on PBA Facebook as well.
What was his comments from it?
It's just he just couldn't believe he left as many corners as everybody as well. He thought he was throwing the ball real well, and he thought the ball motion was good. He wouldn't have, the way it sounded, he wouldn't have changed a thing going into that match. He had the game plan. He thought he executed it well, and the pins just didn't agree.
Sometimes that happens. Don't regret, though, from Svensson, apparently. Yeah. So 193, 184 there.
Then we get to the championship match. It's the four EJ Tackett against the one Matt Russo. And as I've said before, there was no chance I saw Tackett losing to Matt Russo in a championship match on TV at this point. Russo's put together a nice little run here, though. I mean, he use it however you want, but I don't think anybody had Matt Russo on their bingo card for having a big year this year. And Matt Russo's probably had the best year of his career to this point.
I like Matt Russo. And here's the reason why I like Matt Russo. I think Phil knows him probably better than me, but to me, he seems very humble. He works with college teams, college kids. So I'm very happy for the success Russo's having. There was a match a couple of years ago where he was against Rash and had Rash beat going into the 10th, and Rash started blowing up on TV. I don't know if
you don't say.
Yeah. I don't know if that distracted Russo, but he throws a 5-count, misses it, and then Rash wins sitting on the bench. Then Rash gets up off the bench and then apologizes to Russo.
Yeah, he would, of course.
Right.
Does he apologize if he loses?
So I'm happy that a humble, nice guy is winning and having the success that he's having.
You got to remember Russo, too. He's grown up under the shadow and the tutelage of one of the nicest guys ever in the sport, and that's Parker Bowen III.
Yes.
I mean, the family is close and everything. So there you go. You know, apple doesn't fall from the tree with Matt Russo. You know, and when Parker came back to town to watch Matt's match on Sunday in person, there you go. You know how close-knit and tight that family is.
Yeah, no doubt. Very happy for Russo. I mean, he's really had a good year. Attacking just better on this day, 225 to 194. Let's talk about the money won here, shall we?
Yeah.
You remember, y'all, when we started doing this show on the radio on Sunday mornings, and who knows? I do. Maybe we'll get this thing back on the air on Sunday mornings. But when we used to do it, you didn't see prize money like this.
No.
The
PBA was struggling.
It was nothing like this.
Yeah.
Fifth place, Eric Jones, 30 Gs. Grab Fav, 35. Jesper's Vincent, $45,000 for that third place finish. Matt Russo, $60,000 in second. And EJ Tackett, six-figure win, $100,000. Phil, you're around these guys. Are they happy with where the money is at right now? Or do they still think they're behind where they should be?
Well, they're never going to be 100% happy. They always think there should be a way that they should be able to get more money, that, you know, whether it's Bolero not getting enough sponsorships yet or that type of thing. I mean, they're always going to be looking for more money. But tell you what, EJ Tackett with $200,000 in the bank already this year, I think he's pretty happy.
And it's April.
You know, and you look at when he was player of the year in 2016, you know what he won for the entire year? $168,000. So that's, I had to go back because I posted that. I remember posting that last year. He won more. He won almost more than that in the World Series of Bowling this year again. If you look at it, than he did his entire Player of the Year season 8 years ago.
Again,
you guys, yeah, and that doesn't count the money they're making in PBA League that they didn't have back then, and all. Yeah,
this is the thing, and we praise Tom Clark a lot. And sometimes I get after Tom Clark for different things I don't like, or I make suggestions and so forth. But again, if you look at where this sport was, what he started. That mm-hmm. job to it, where this is now,
it's gross.
Like every bowler better just bow down and kiss that dude's feet and be like, thank you. Cause this thing could have just been gone. Yes. It could have just went away like the women's tour, and that would have been the end of it. And y'all would have been running around bowling regionals, and that would have been it.
No,
that would have been the end of it. The dude saved the sport. Not only did he save the sport, he grew the sport out to where now if you're coming out of college, you can look at it and go, yeah,
I can make a living.
I can make okay money with this. I can make this work. If I get to be really good, I can make really good money at this. To me,
top five, top 10.
Yeah, enough just doesn't get said. We always talk about the commissioners in sports, right? Bud Selig, David Stir, Roger Goodell, all these guys in all these bigger sports, I guess. But you're going to have a hard time selling out anybody doing a better job than Tom Clark has done with this tour from the time he started to where it was when he ended.
And how many ideas does Rob Manfred and Adam Silver, how many do they actually?
No, I didn't put Rob Manfred into the great idea category.
Any commissioner like that, because they have their staffs of 20, 30, 50 people that come up with all these things. Tom doesn't have a staff.
What are you talking about? He's got us.
Are we on his payroll?
All right, balance.
I mean, listen to the podcast. I give him ideas every week, Phil. What do you need?
Okay. So we're a staff of three.
I haven't seen that check come in yet.
No, we don't get checks.
Right. But that, you know, all the ideas that Tom has come with up with on his own, or maybe there's one or two other people in the in the PBA back in those days, you know, like a Janae Haggerty that or Dave Schroeder that worked with Tom, whether they helped them, you know, build on the ideas that Tom would have in his head. You know, it's they don't have these, you know, 30, 40 person staffs with the PBA. You know, there's maybe 15 people that work directly with the PBA at Bowlero, maybe 15. So
that's not very big. No.
Yeah. To run a sport that's televised, that's not a very, And they do it pretty well. And the ratings were good again, according to Jeff Riggles at 11th Frame, more than 750,000 people watched. So, I mean, the ratings, once again, maybe EJ had something to do with that. Maybe he's becoming the household name that Jason Labonte's been for the first years. More and more people see EJ's name on the program guide. Maybe that helped them tune in as well. One of these days, we're going to get to 1 million on Fox again. I think if it keeps going, I think we'll get to 1 million on Fox. But
it's just nice to see the growth for these guys, too. Because, again, you got to remember, this is their living. So I do have a debate question on it. During that last match, they talked about Mark Baker's comments, either on a text message regarding the Mount Rushmore of releases.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about Marshall Holman being in there, and including EJ. But the one that he missed on, Mark Baker missed on, and I thought, oh, my God, how can you not mention it, is Pete Weber. And they always talk about his release when he's on TV, the open hand. So why isn't he on the Mount Rushmore of releases on the tour?
I don't. Who are the? Okay, so you got EJ, you got Marshall. I couldn't hear the audio. I was at the arena. Yeah. So Pete, I mean, yeah, it was a release that he built off of Mark Roth with, but he was also, Mark was a little bit more close-handed than Pete was. I don't know if it's necessarily a release with Pete. I mean, the form and everything was unique.
But the thing is, they always
talk. Paul Roll, yeah, I can't see him on a Mount Rushmore.
Really? Because again, they talk about EJ Tackett having the same open hand release as Pete Weber.
Yeah, but I look at releases as the ability to change rotation and tilt and that type of thing, and able to trick it. And EJ can trick it better than anybody on tour.
Yeah.
And make it look like he's not, make it look like he's not tricking it.
Yeah. I never saw Marshall Holman though trick the ball. You never heard that term back then.
Have to bet. Well, they didn't have it back in the day, but also back in the day, I mean, they were only in the lanes once a day during PBA tournaments. So then by the time you got to the night block and carry down, what little carry down there was, they were drier in the front. And so Marshall had to trick it to get around it more to clear the fronts and then turn a little bit more on the carry down on the back end. So tricking it back in the 70s and 80s is a hell of a lot different than tricking it now. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who can trick a release, Anthony Simonson. That's a guy I definitely would put on my Mount Rushmore, because obviously he can do anything he wants to change the rotation on the bowling ball. It's easier for two-handers to do that. Put Belmo on there as well. I mean, Belmo, I've seen him, you know, change, go up the back of the ball when he's playing on shorter patterns and that type of thing.
I just thought it was a great question and a great comment, but I was surprised that Weber was there. And I believe the guys he mentioned, there was not one two-hander in that Mount Rushmore of releases. I think they were all thumbed bowlers.
Probably, and it's an easy way to look at it, because most people still, I mean, even you look at recreational bowlers, you know, or league bowlers, most of those people are one-handed bowlers, so they're trying to relate to the one-handers a bit. As these younger players come up and the two-hand game becomes more prevalent, then you're going to have to start looking at who's got the better two-handed release. Sure, it's still a release because the front hand's coming off the ball. Sure, there's no thumb in the ball for most two-handers. I can't even think of anybody on tour that's still two-handed with a thumb. Russo changed this year. He got his thumb out of it. Maldonado changed a couple of years ago. Yeah. Got his thumb out of it. Yeah, there's.
There's many left.
I don't think there are any on tour. I really don't. I think it's all pure two hand, no thumb on tour now. So yeah, it's pretty interesting with clearing the release and that. And as the game keeps progressing, I heard somebody joke this week, I wish I had three hands to help. I need more revs. You know, here's a two-hander with 550 revs. I need more revs. I need a third hand. So
one other question I wanted to ask you last week. And we ran out of time on it. And I told Sparky, I wanted to really ask him this week, was the PBA Elite League that was taped in the Bay, Strobel Bay Arena, yeah, in Detroit. Francis yeah. Lavoie, yeah, used an Eternity Pie bowling ball, went perfect with it, 4 for 4 for strikes. Mm-hmm. But you know me, I'm the ball geek. And so yeah, I picked up something on, when they show the ball on TV, I picked up something. I wanted to just see if you heard anything about this, but his pin was upside down. So the pin was to the left of his thumb hole, almost a full roller position, and his mass bias was just to the right of his ring finger. Now, right away, when you start thinking about something like that, is he going to start clipping holes, or has Frankie converted to a full roller release?
I haven't heard anything about converting it, but also, how straight was he playing those shots too?
Well, when you put the pin down in the negative thumb quadrant of the ball, yeah, it's going to hook early and have very little back end. And they all right, were throwing urethane except for Frankie. So right, did Frankie figure something out with a resin ball to make it roll like urethane by turning the top of the weight block and putting it upside down?
Yeah, that, I
think no talk from the Storm reps at all regarding this?
Didn't really get a chance to talk to anybody during the league shows because I was out doing stuff in the Arena Bay. But yeah, I've seen guys, I mean, there's some pretty unique drillings that are going on tour nowadays. These guys never stop researching on what if they put, you know, like you said, a mass bias here and a pin there and CG here, you know, of what it could do for certain players. And, you know,
well, he had a really good look with it.
Right. Because, and if he goes, and Frankie doesn't have much access tilt to begin with, so he probably didn't have to worry too much about clipping holes. And so it's just something where, hey, you know, in this type of condition, you can play a straighter game and you know that ball is going to be rolling strong at the pocket. It's not going to waste time getting into a roll. And how, I mean, Frankie was throwing it pretty firm too for Frankie. Yep. So there you go. So now he's got another tool in his arsenal. So if he hits a longer pattern down the tournament trail and they get something that's, you know, like the shark, like 47 foot. You know, there's right, something that could be a tool for him early on in the block where guys were still using urethane and on yep, a 47 foot pattern in Detroit in the main bay because of all the friction on the old lane surface.
The first time I've ever seen it, that's why I thought there possibly could have been some talk on it. Yep. But what people got to remember is when you take the top of the weight block and you put it in the negative thumb quadrant of the ball or just to the left of the thumb, most of us are going to clip the holes. Yeah. So I was really surprised I didn't hear any thumping as the ball's going down the lane. But, yeah, I mean, he basically took a resin bowling ball, which carries better
right,
than a urethane, and made it roll like a urethane ball. So I didn't know if there was the latest technique out there.
Talk to Matt Gasson from Storm. Like I said, these guys are always, always looking for the next trick that could give them an advantage. And, you know, out on tour, they have the opportunity to you know, once – you know, tournament sessions are done or guys are eliminated from a tournament. They do have practice sessions for the guys that are still hanging around before the next stop. And they get the opportunity to bowl on the leftovers. And that could be just something that, you know, between these ball reps and the player and working with people back at HQ in Utah, they came up with something unique.
Yeah. If you could ask Jim Callahan next time you see him, I'd love to know what his take was on it.
I don't know if I'll see Jimmy anytime soon with the rest. Okay. I mean, the PBA season, I don't know if he'll be I'm not going to be at the playoffs in Seattle that I know of. And that's really about it. So we'll have to see if somebody publishes something on social media or some.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the latest thing coming.
Yeah.
Jeff Riggles, you're listening. So go figure this out and write a story and help Dwight out.
Jeff's right, in Vegas. Jeff's in Vegas getting some R&R, well-deserved R&R in right now.
Oh, so he'll listen. He always listens. I'm at frame.com. Jeff Riggles does amazing stuff. Go check it out. And watch for the story on Dwight's question about the bowling ball coming soon. All right, there he is, Dwight Albrecht at Dewey 300. Bill Brilo, Bruce City Bowling. Follow me at Sparky Radio, another edition of the Spare Time Bowling Show. Enjoy the rest of your day.